It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And yeah, so apparently the hat's bunny ears were off or something, and so that's why we got that nice long break.
Well,
but here we are again.
I think our plan worked there just for a little bit. We thought we were free.
Oh, did you do it? I was not involved.
No, well, I had a plan, and it
just taking a lot of pennies?
No.
Okay.
No, it had to do with... It's a lot of science-y stuff. It's complicated.
Microwaves.
Yeah, but it worked for just like a second.
Yeah.
And then it all fell apart, so...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the multiverse that just won't let us go.
But Elon Musk is confident that we can figure it out.
Yes.
I'll keep chipping away.
He just recently launched a car with a goatee on it into space.
It was amazing. So he thinks he can help with this hat thing, and it almost worked. He's brilliant.
He's also convinced we're in a elaborate evil simulated reality.
Well, I think that's the theory he was going on. And so I don't agree with him, so I was kind of surprised when it worked at first, but then it didn't work. So I think he's kind of questioning that theory now.
It was weird when I finally found out the mathematical reason why all these tech guys think we must be in a simulated reality. And I'm still, for infinite universes, somebody's going to try and make the Matrix, basically.
I don't know.
So they must have. Like, it was one of those that I'm like, I'm following your steps of reasoning, but mostly it just sounds so full of yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. People often use those types of arguments, and we've used these types of arguments, or not used them, but we've brought them up in our conversations. Yes. About how, well, if given enough time, it seems like certain things would be inevitable. Well, that's not always true.
No.
Like we've talked about, like given enough time, if you and I, you know, and we're evil, if given enough time, if we were given eternal life, for example, we would probably go through a period of time where we weren't evil. Well, that's not necessarily true.
No.
Because you know, we could still make decisions. I mean, nothing. Just because something has a certain probability doesn't give it an inevitability. But yes, there are some things where, like, well, for example, the question of whether or not there's other life in the universe. Well, okay, that's probably pretty certain that there is. You know, given the space that we know of, even. And given the way life emerges that we know of so far, pretty certain that there's other life in the intelligent life in the universe. Now, but that still leaves a question of how much intelligent life is in, say, our galaxy. We could be the only ones. That's not a mathematical impossibility.
Also, is it simulated intelligent life? Or just...
Well, again, that becomes a whole other question, because it's one thing to take known factors of the universe and speculate that there's life, other intelligent life here. It's another thing to take metaphysical things that you can just make up outside the universe in terms of, well, is this a simulation? Is there someone who built this? I mean, that's really the same question as whether or not there's a God when you think about it. And you can just fill in that space with whatever you want. That's not quite the same as in the universe, given the rules that we know and can prove, what can we say about whether or not there's intelligent life in the universe? Different kind of question.
For a while, I was really big into this idea of making a short story. I've had a variety of different versions of it, but it was basically going to come down to you die and there is an afterlife and there is a higher power, but it's like not what you expected.
Sure, sure.
So I played around with a lot of those, and for some reason they just got really, like, mean towards Christianity in a way that I didn't feel. So, like, it started coming up with these ones, like, there was like, essentially the whole thing was a class project for some higher being, and Christianity really was the right one, but it was just, like, an experiment to see how many would do which, and your heavenly reward for being one of the ones that did, like, changed your metaphysical makeup so that you could basically be used as, I think, fuel, and so you were burning for eternity for being a good Christian. And I was just like, I think I sent it to Trish, and she's like, that seems really confrontational. I'm like, it does. Am I mad at them? I don't think so.
Well, no, you were just going for the most.
I was going for the twist. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, something really.
It was the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
They really wanted good Christians so they could burn them. And then I'm like, don't be a dick. Yeah, so I didn't actually write it. Although, I don't know. At such time as I ever get around to Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates, the concept that what exists outside of Earth is not what we thought existed, and that people may or may not have been just faking it for us, does come into play.
So, interesting.
We'll have to see.
Hmm.
It may just be an excuse of how I can write a sci-fi series without knowing much science, but we'll have to find out.
Well, there are some people who think they base their statements that we're in a simulation or something, because they say, well, the more you look at the ground state of physical reality, the more grainy, and they say pixelated, it looks, which is absurd.
Atoms are like pixels.
Kind of. But that's kind of a ridiculous thing to say. For one thing, what actually happens, especially when you take quantum physics into account, is everything's all smudgy. It's not...
I thought it was stringy.
I mean, it's probably more accurate to say that if you go far enough down, it's all crunchy. Smooth. It's all one smooth thing, and it's not little pieces or bits at all. Or at least it's valid to see it that way. In fact, in the alternate reality that I'm writing, the physics is based not on particles, but on pulses, and the notion that everything comes up from almost like a liquid or a fluid. And so all of their thought about physics and also computers, it's all, the metaphors are all fluid-based, and, you know, how things flow and how you direct the flow of something.
Now I gotta pee.
But it's a perfectly valid way to approach it as an analogy, and one of the reasons I'm writing this story this way is because I want people to understand that the way there's a lot of analogy in the way science works, and they don't have to use those analogies.
Yeah,
they could use completely different ones and arrive at the same types of scientific conclusions and the same technologies.
There's a lot of Facebook stuff about that, where people question scientific things, and it's like, no, you took that word pejorative. Like the classic is always the whole, if we evolved from monkeys or apes, why are there still monkeys and apes? And it's like, well, we didn't evolve from those ones. I know the picture shows it that way, but that's not.
Well, like, thinking of the fundamental stuff of the universe as little billiard balls, for example. I mean, that's something we use as a helpful visual thing, but you could picture them as something different and still work with that analogy to come up with certain scientific principles and technologies. And the suggestion that I'm trying to make in the story I'm telling is, maybe if we switched the analogies we use, we'd actually open ourselves up to understanding science better. Maybe our analogies are holding us back. See? So that's another thing I'm trying to get at.
That's some powerful shit there.
Not really. It's just...
I know, I'm just humoring you. Okay. I like you to feel that you're doing well.
Okay, well, it doesn't work, so that's fine. How come, you know, that's supposed to be a smile. Why does it look like a frown?
Because we're in the evil world.
Wait a minute, the evil world. There's no goatee on it, though.
Amazon frowns. And weirdly, Jeff Bezos is the poorest and most generous man in the world.
Okay. Why did I even say that? I don't know.
Because you were setting me up perfectly. That's why.
Do we need Do we need to talk about what how this works?
Oh yeah, for those of you just joining us, that's weird. There's a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, I suppose, write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, things like that. The hat magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its erstwhile servants, not us normally, but us this time, draw the note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's pretty much the show.
Yep, and sometimes the guys who usually do this can't do it for some reason, and then we get roped into it.
We're forced to.
We dodged it a couple times there, but...
Vagaries of the multiverse.
But they got us back. Elon Musk's plan only worked a little bit. He'll refine it. We'll get it right.
Ow! Ow! We're really going to have to start trimming your back claws, Ezzy, because you use them way too much to climb on me, and it hurts.
What should we talk about something else or draw from
I don't hat? Think I got anything else, oh, okay. So I might as well.
Okay. Mark McKibben.
Mark McKibben.
In a slightly digested question. Or point, I don't know.
Crossing you in style.
He says, this question is inspired by something on the internet. The question is, how do giraffes work?
Not very well.
Well, they go to the newspaper and they look through the one ads. They find something they think suits them, and then they go in for a job interview, just like everybody else. Now, they don't interview very well, giraffes in general.
They don't.
I don't mean to be stereotypical, but it's just a fact. They don't interview very well.
And it's nothing to do with their actual, like, they make okay workers. They just.
Well, it's hard to say because they, you know, there's a high unemployment rate.
Okay, but at some point, some giraffes have been hired. How have they done?
I don't know. They just have a bad reputation.
Oh, so you're just being racist. I see.
Kind of. I don't mean to all be, right. But this is the only information I've got on giraffes. The problem.
Oh, calling them long necks.
No, here's the thing that a lot of people just think giraffes are not very smart and they don't want to hire them. But what happens, this is what a lot of people think happens is...
Standardized tests are biased against giraffes?
No. When they interview, of course, there's... And I don't know why no one thought of this before. There's quite a bit of distance between... their mouth and the interviewer's ears, right?
I see.
So sometimes they don't hear each other very well, but they don't. No one's ever seemed to take that into account. So when the interviewer asks a question and the giraffe gives a stupid answer, it doesn't occur to the interviewer to say, well, maybe they didn't hear me right. Maybe I need to repeat it or speak louder. They just think that the giraffe said something stupid. It's just they're just too far away from each other.
At Disney World during the Lion King thing, we were separated into four groups, the audience, that were going to be the lions, the elephants, the warthogs, and the giraffes.
Mm.
And we had to do the sound of them.
Oh.
I was in the elephants, which is good because I do a pretty good elephant.
Sure.
But then we got to the giraffes, and they got a little kid each to like lead thing, and they got to, and the girl doesn't know what a giraffe sound like.
I don't know what a giraffe sounds like either.
Apparently, it's not too different. It's not too different from a sheep's bleat.
Okay.
So they were going, bah. And I was like, really? I have such a hard time picturing that.
Well, that probably doesn't help them with getting jobs either.
No. My favorite image of giraffes is always during their mating, when they're fighting each other. Have you seen giraffes fight?
And they're with their swinging their necks around?
I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
That's maybe the most badass thing I've ever seen, is watching the, like, who decides, like, you know what? My head's basically a flail. I'm just going to go, whack, thwack.
Well, when, you know, whenever you interview a giraffe, it's always outside, of course, because they can't fit into the... You know, if they would just let them back up a little bit and just sort of bend down. But see, you know, they put the desk here and the chair here just very close together, like a foot away.
Ergonomically, it's not good.
Yeah, they can't get their head down like that. So you just, you've got to make some allowances, but nobody wants to do that, so they don't get very
Walmart
good.
Walmart greeters? I don't know. In there is pretty high.
Well, you know that there's the problem with them just hanging out on corners and dealing drugs and stuff.
Well, and they're the poster children from Lamarckian evolution. Yeah. Which, I understand that for the sake of history, you should teach about Lamarck and his ideas about evolution. The problem is, there are a lot of people who remember that they learned that in school, but don't remember that it's wrong.
I don't know. I don't remember learning that in school.
Really? I do.
I don't think so.
And so there are a lot of people who legitimately still are like, yeah, evolution, if you work out a lot, your babies will be in better health and stuff like that. And I actually saw one the other day that specifically referenced that as though it were a real thing. It was like, yeah, giraffes had to like stretch their necks, and then their babies had longer necks. I'm like, no! Why don't you go to creationism instead? They could use you over there.
Well, it is a shame what happens with giraffes. I mean, someone really should do something about it.
I'm really not comfortable with this line you have. This just sounds really racist against giraffes.
No, I'm trying to understand.
Do you have any giraffe friends?
Well, no. But I do worry, you know, when I see them, you know, getting neck corrective surgery and all that stuff. I mean, they shouldn't have to do that.
Some of them, I'm sure, are good people.
And they're not, you never see them in movies, unless they're thugs and drug dealers and very stupid. So, you know, it's just, some people need to do better with giraffes. Because I think it's just that, you know, we just don't understand each other. They're too high up there. You know what I think it is?
Why do you think it is?
I have to be honest?
You do have to be honest.
I think when your head is that high up, you just see the world so different. Right?
Oh my God.
It's just hard to relate to the people whose heads are like down here, where our heads are.
This is like the fast twitch muscle mass argument, like, but for giraffes.
Like maybe they're actually better than we are.
Oh my God.
And we're so jealous that we have to marginalize them. I don't know.
Oh, this is making me so uncomfortable.
Anyway, that's how giraffes work or don't work.
Oh, let's draw something else out. I'm freaking out over here.
Okay. There's that. It's your turn.
Oh, okay, fine. No, not that one. I didn't look at it, people. I could just tell by the feel of the card.
It was Azure Talon.
This one, again. this one appears to be anonymous.
Okay.
Because there's no name on it. Do you agree O.J. Simpson should be / have been released from prison?
Well, I mean, what does our feeling have to do with it? I mean, if he was sentenced to a particular time, or if he's eligible for parole, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'm sure he was let out in accordance with the rules.
Yes. Here's what I feel like is probably being asked here.
Oh, okay.
So, a long time ago, O.J. Simpson legally determined not to have, but most of us are pretty sure he did, murder two people.
Okay. And we're going to go with that.
No, I'm just to tell you the thing.
Okay.
A lot of us are under the impression that he totally did, but he was found legally not to have.
Right.
However, he was then in civil court found to have been responsible for those deaths.
Liable, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He has managed to avoid mostly paying any of the...
Judgment
mm-hmm. from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did some crazy shit where he tried to steal some memorabilia of that had been his that had been sold or something.
Something like that, yeah.
And he went to jail. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were like, well, at least now he's going to jail. Mm-hmm. And so in their heads, it was less about he robbed that stuff, but like, this is your just delayed punishment for killing those people. And so the idea that now he's being let out on parole for the, you know, much less significant crime of having stolen the memorabilia irks people because they're like, no, keep him in there because really what we're doing is punishing him for murdering those people.
Right.
It's like Martin Scorsese got an Oscar for The Departed. Not because The Departed deserved an Oscar, really, but just because we did manage to do it when Goodfellas came out. And so everybody's like, we're not saying that it's not time for him to come out if he was a robber, but also the murder, so keep him in there. And legally, that doesn't work.
No, that's not how the law works.
And
nor should we want it to, because if it worked that way for him, it would work that way for all of us.
Well, and this is... A lot of things are like that, because I'm very much of the opinion on all of these issues that I don't know what the fuck's happening. Like, yeah. I am not in a position that I should have any official word as to whether or not O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Richie. And
sure.
I think he did, based on what I have learned, but I have not learned enough or am in a position that that should have any official weight. And that's why I also very much in this time when we're having all of these allegations of sexual harassment and everything and people are losing their jobs and da-da-da-da-da-da, I certainly don't think I'm in a position to say, send that guy to jail or anything like that because I don't know and it's not being handled in court of law. It's allegations. However, not everybody who's guilty is found guilty. And if there is a large, overwhelming belief of something, potentially there's consequences for that. In O.J. Simpson's case, I don't know at this point. O.J. Simpson's situation is just so weird. When he wrote the damn If I Did It book, things just got really weird on that. But, like, you know, no... Bill Cosby has not been charged with any... Bill Cosby has not been convicted of anything. He has had, what, 40-some-odd women accuse him of incredibly similar crimes? I'll bet something's up. And so I feel okay at the idea that maybe nobody's ever going to hire him again to do shit, and maybe his career's over. I'm not saying he should go to jail. He should go to jail if he's found guilty in his court case. He should not go to jail if he is not. However, I'm very okay with him losing his livelihood.
Yeah, I think you one thing you and I would agree on is that whatever's wrong with, or whatever doesn't work with our legal system, I don't think either you or I could think of a better way.
Yeah.
You know, like O.J. was charged, he had a trial, and he was, whether or not we agree with the outcome, we can't think of a better way to handle it, so we pretty much have to accept what the outcome is. But as you're...
That being said, if I had the chance to do business with him or help him in some way or not, I would not because I personally think he's a murderer.
Exactly, exactly. So, there, like you say, there are consequences even if they're not the legal consequences.
And I have the legal right to be like, I think you're a murderer. I don't want to go into business with
right,
you.
Right, right, right.
Even if I'm like, I'm not in a position to say you should go to jail. And I mean, it's the same thing. I'm glad there's investigations looking into Harvey Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, nothing has been concretely proven, but I'm totally okay with everybody abandoning him.
Well,
you know, do I think Louis C.K. should be in jail for the shit he did? I don't know. Maybe. Nobody's pressing charges. Am I okay with the fact that he's having the Hollywood equivalent of losing his job because people don't want to work with him because he did that shit? Yes!
Yeah, and he's admitted that he did it, so
yeah.
There's not any even a question
where that goes. And I feel like this is like, because a lot of people are hiding behind this idea, you know, that it was never proven. I'm like, okay, that keeps you out of jail. That keeps you from paying a $1 million fine or whatever. it doesn't mean there aren't consequences for people who think it happened, or for people who know it happened.
Right, right.
Even if the law did not find it such.
Right, right.
The law is the best system we have at this point for punishing people for crimes against society.
For attempting to sort it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the best we have. It is not the truth.
No.
And so there are other consequences. So yeah, I'm a little disappointed that OJ's getting out of jail. I just feel like in general, I mean, his life's been pretty fucked up by this, but I feel like it's not as fucked up as I would like it to have been for him
for murder?
What I think he did.
Yeah, for murder. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
for murder and for a lot of aspects of how it was
handled since then.
But you know, I certainly wouldn't want someone to have broken the law in keeping him in there or anything
like that. Right,
and
right.
You know, I'm not hanging out with him. I'm not buying his book about haha, I murdered somebody and I got away with it. Like, none of that. So, whatever.
But isn't it? He's a very odd. I mean, before all this happened, he seemed like an ordinary person. And then after it happened, everything he said seemed weird. Everything he did seemed weird.
Yeah.
Like, how can. Now he seems like such a strange, odd, not even connected to reality kind of person. How did. Was that not noticed beforehand? How could he have reasonable conversations with people? How could he be a sportscaster and you understood everything he was saying? And it's like, yeah, this guy seems like a normal guy. But everything that happened after, every statement he made, every expression he made, you know, it's like you see everything that is publicized of him afterwards and it's weird. The way he expresses himself, the way he talks, the things he says. And you think, how could he be so different now when before he just seemed so normal?
I can think of two
really bizarre
reasons. I mean, I have no idea. But I can think of two potentially contributing reasons to this. One is, you know, let's say if he did it, I can fuck with your head.
Oh, that's true. Like, you're right about that. Yeah.
And it seemed, you know, based on certain evidence that was presented at the time of how he reacted right afterwards, it's possible that really threw him. I mean, it should have really fucked with his head. And I certainly, insofar as I believe he did it, I don't believe it was a cold, calculating, planned thing. I believe it was very much sort of a crime of passion kind of thing.
And then he couldn't face it afterwards.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
So I understand why that would mess you up. But the other thing, and then this is a theory of mine again, but he's much more insulated now.
Yeah.
He doesn't just go out in the world and shit. And when that happens, if you are stuck with a relatively small number of people in your life, and they're all near you because they have to be, or because they are in that weird group that believes you or whatever, your perspective on the world changes.
Yeah, it's warped.
I mean, all 13-year-old boys write shitty, shitty poetry or philosophy, but you have to be in Jaden Smith's bubble to think that the rest of the world wants to hear about it.
Yeah.
The rest of us were browbeaten enough to know that nobody else wanted to hear our shitty poetry and, in fact, would mock us for it.
Yeah.
And just every once in a while when you hear, like, a very successful actor or musician or anything, and they come up with these sort of ideas about, and you're like, where? Gwyneth Paltrow, what the fuck are you talking about? It's like, because Gwyneth Paltrow lives on a cloud, and she says things, and the people around her are like, oh, yeah, that's so true. And she doesn't experience so much of the hardship and just aspects of day-to-day life that so many of the rest of the world does. And after enough years in that position, you don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, no, it really, really, this $20,000 dildo is your key to sexual awakening. What? That's normal.
It's normal.
You could hardly buy any limes on food stamps. It's terrible. I can't even make a good guacamole every day. This rainwater we put in a bottle will change your chakras and turn you into a kitten. I haven't seen it happen, but these other crazy people tell me it will and took my money, so it must.
And they can't be liars.
Yeah, like, that's the kind of shit that happens. I'm sorry I'm picking on Gwyneth Paltrow a lot, but holy shit. every time you hear about Gwyneth Paltrow, it's either a new Iron Man movie or some insane shit. Those are the only two things. Marvel, Pepper Potts, or pepper pots that will cure cancer. Like, she's actual pots of pepper that cure cancer.
She's got a heck of a goatee, though. I mean, you gotta give her that.
No, and I mean, and I'm sure it exists for me at this point, because I'm not the most sociable creature. I have the people I see at work. I have the people I see at gaming. I have you. I have Trish. That's it. I mean, I guess I have my family. I see them periodically. But I keep a fairly insular structure these days, so I'm probably getting out of touch with reality. I'm okay with that, though. What's reality done for me lately? Not
much. I don't know.
All right, draw another one. Yep. The juice is over.
It's over. Juice is over.
There was an episode of The Simpsons that took place before he got locked up for the memorabilia thing, and Marge said something about how this is the most exciting thing that's happened since the juice was loose. And Lisa turns to her and says, the juice is still loose. Because he was.
I guess so. What is the hardest goal you ever set for yourself? Did you achieve it? I'm gonna say that I didn't achieve the hardest goals. That's what makes them the hardest.
Oh.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Sort of. I mean, I have had fortune cookies before.
Well, what I'm saying is, if I achieved it, it might have been hard, right? It might have been a hard thing for me to achieve. But if I didn't achieve it, I mean, I suppose there's lots of ways, reasons you could not achieve a goal besides how difficult it is.
Well, because that's the thing. Like, I may have achieved a goal of single-handedly working three jobs to put myself through school to get a master's degree. Also, tomorrow I'm planning on getting donuts on the way to work. Now, technically, I've completed one of those goals, and I haven't done the other one, but it doesn't mean that the other one's harder.
Or if you fail at the other one, that it was harder. Yes. I get that, but...
So the question is, do you have goals, or do you have either unfulfilled goals now, or goals that went unfulfilled and eventually you got rid of them, that to your mind are harder than any goals you have succeeded at, or at which you have succeeded? The hardest goal I ever set was to finish this episode of this podcast, so I won't be able to tell you if I succeeded for another 28 minutes or so.
I guess what I'm saying is, for me, if I set a goal for myself, I mean, you know, when I think of setting a goal for myself, I mean, there's lots of ways, like you said, you're going to accomplish certain things at the end of the day, you know, you could see that as a goal you're setting for yourself. But that's not what I'm thinking of. When I think of set a goal for yourself, I'm thinking of like a long-term career goal or something big. It's got to be something big. And if I had a big goal, like going to graduate school and getting a PhD, that was a goal I had, a big goal, mm-hmm. that didn't happen.
Why have I been calling you doctor all these years?
But it didn't. That's a good example of something that didn't fail because it was hard. There were circumstances, like the guy that who was my mentor, clear to almost, you know, I'm a junior or whatever, or late in my sophomore year, and he says, well, no, I don't take grad students anymore, which I didn't know. So, you know, it's pretty late in my college career to have to rearrange everything. And I applied to the programs that he told me to apply to, incredibly competitive programs, but I didn't know anybody in those programs. If I'd known that I might need to get a leg into those programs before, I would have maybe taken more classes in them, or I would have gotten to know some people over there. But I was already starting behind when I applied to those programs. I didn't get in any of them. There were some other programs that I didn't apply to because they were in places I didn't want to move to. So it didn't fail so much because I tried and failed because it was hard. Circumstances and certain personal choices conspired against me that this just didn't happen. But there are other things goals I set for myself, and the reason they didn't happen was because, again, it's hard to say that they were too hard for me, but I didn't achieve them. I mean, I put 100% into them and they didn't happen. So I don't, maybe one thing you could say was it was too difficult. I bit off more than I could chew. It was too difficult or whatever. So that's why I say that, you know, a lot of things that I failed at, it's because they were harder than the things that I didn't fail at, because I achieved those things. They were relatively easy compared to the things I failed at. Maybe that's the wrong way to look at it. I don't know.
See, we've had problems talking about goals before. Is there a difference between a goal and just shit I want to do? Because, like, I went to college, and I definitely wanted to graduate and have a degree.
That happened.
But I don't know that I set a goal for that. I was just like, I'm here, I'm going to do that.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I feel the same
way. Which is not to say that I thought it was a foregone conclusion. I understood that if I sucked, I wouldn't do it. Like, if I failed all my classes, I probably would not graduate.
And you had smaller goals of finishing this paper.
Yeah, but there aren't a lot of goals. I can't think of things that this was bugging me earlier, too. So, in large parts of the Simpsons, again, as usual, I've recently been dealing with this concept that envy and jealousy are different things, and that people frequently misuse, especially the term jealous. Because very rarely would you be able to say, I'm jealous, unless it was literally like, I'm jealous of you associating with my partner or something like that. Because jealousy is about wanting to keep what you have. Envy is when you want what others have. So I wouldn't be jealous of your new shoes. I would be envious of your new shoes. But then, is intent a factor? Because, like, if you're like, I just got this candy bar, and I'm like, shit, now I want a candy bar. I suppose I'm envious of your candy bar. But what if I'm just like, I want a candy bar, and I tell you I want a candy bar, and you're like, oh, I got one of those, but you can't have it. It's mine. Am I envious of your candy bar, or did I just want a candy bar and you happen to have one?
I think it turns to envy when it wouldn't be good enough for you to have a candy bar that's not my candy bar.
See, is it only envious if I want, because that's the thing, do I have to want something and take it away from you? Do I have to not want you to have it for it to be envy? Because if that's true, I'm almost never envious. Very rarely, I'm like, no, I just want the same thing. You can have your version. I just want.
I don't think it's envy unless you want.
Because I think jealousy is sort of like.
I don't think it's envy unless you want, unless it's a situation where you want or you have to take it from them. So, like, if I have a Snickers bar, you can just go buy a Snickers bar.
Right.
So you're not going to envy my Snickers bar.
But what if I'm just like too poor to buy a Snickers bar? I still want a Snickers bar.
Then,
it doesn't have to be yours, though. If you want to go get me a different one, I'm fine with that.
And I think the problem with envy is it's not really about the thing. You know, I think that's part of the sin, if you will, of envy, is that I'm upset that you have it. It's not just what you have. It's that you have it, and I don't have it.
Wow, then I really need to stop using that word. Because I frequently tell people I'm envious of stuff.
Right,
and apparently I'm never envious of them.
But they know you don't mean in a deep, sinful way, like you're going to kill them for it.
I know, but if I'm just not using the right term, I don't like that.
But you're not being entirely serious, are you?
Well, I was. I mean,
well, people say
I was when I said I'm envious, meaning I also wish I had that.
Yeah.
But if envy means that I wish I had that and you didn't, then... No, I wasn't being serious in that. I didn't realize that's what that sentence meant.
I could be wrong. That's just what
That's what I'm saying is I'm misusing the sentence.
That's just how I understand envy to work. Because I don't.
I was not intentionally making a joke where I was like, "Ha ha! I wish I could steal that thing."
No,
from
but
me.
Like people say, "Oh, I'm jealous of." They'll say jealous, like you say. They misuse it, but what they really mean is, "Oh, I'm envious of your bagel." They don't really mean they're feeling anger or all of the things that usually come with that word.
Yes. I don't when I say it, but I didn't think that I was making a joke version of saying that.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying here. My intention was not to jokingly imply that. Mine was to quite straightforwardly say, oh, dude, I want a bagel also. So if that's not what that means.
No, but I think that's what it communicates. I don't think anyone thinks you want to take something away from them. I think they know what you mean, that, oh, he wishes he had a bagel too. Not my bagel, but a bagel.
Yeah, I'm not okay with using a sentence in a way that I didn't intend if it coincidentally it worked out.
Well, but
I'll
just
tell people, oh man, I want one.
But again, that's my understanding of how envy works. Because here the thing is, if you're talking about envy as a thing that is bad for people to do, for whatever reason, like it's bad for them
to do.
Which
I'm not necessarily.
Okay. But
There is a certain brand of religion that draws it as a sin. I'm just trying to get to what its actual definition is, not its moral implications.
All right, well let me... Then that's what I'm speaking to is for people who think that envy is immoral. It's not... I don't think it's that you want a thing. It's not immoral to want a thing. It's immoral to want the thing that belongs to... It's the only way you're going to get it is if you take it away from that person. That's what envy is, in the moral sense. But that's not the only sense of the term, obviously. So, I mean, you
see, when I was in college, a friend said to me that envy was when you want what someone else had, and jealousy was when you want it to the exclusion of them having it. And I loved having that distinction, because I thought that was really useful. I now know that they pulled that out of their butt. But that's what I would like. I would like two words where one can be like, I want to take that from you, and one can just be like, I wish I also had that cool thing.
Well,
and apparently it's just going to be, I wish I also had that cool thing, is what it's going to be from now on for me. So,
because
like when I say, I'll kill you, like yeah. That one, we're all in on the joke. Or if they're not, it's funnier. But the other one, like that, it was not my intention to be implying something else. I was just like, oh, I wish I had that. So now I'm just going to say that. So it's the same thing, problem for me with goal. I apparently don't really set goals. I got shit I want to do, and sometimes I do them. You could say like I had a goal to write the book, but I had like it was part of a bigger goal that I haven't finished yet, and I may or I may not. But I'm not going to be like, yeah, I didn't make. I don't know. I don't think in goals. I've never thought in goals.
Well, I'm not sure I do either. But another thing about writing a book. That's a good example of how complicated this can get. I've had goals to finish books. And they were very hard goals. I achieved them. But then again, the real goal wasn't just to write the book. It was to write it, have people read it, you know what I'm saying?
Start a new religion based on...
Well, no. There's just a bigger thing involved than just writing the book. And none of those things happened. Yeah. So did I reach my goal or not? And to write the book, as hard as that was an easy sub-goal, if you will, to reach compared to the rest of it, which was to have it read and to have it be popular and whatever. And that was very hard, so hard that I have yet to actually achieve it.
People have read it.
Well, sure, but you see what I'm saying.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, I think where does one goal start and the other end, and what's hard and what's not hard, and I don't
know. To me, the usefulness of real goals are, it gives you the opportunity to formally incentivize something. So people... Setting a goal that's just got nothing attached to it is just saying, I want to do that. And to me, that's not a really... But if you do things like, if I can do this, then this happens. Like, if I can successfully keep to my exercise routine for 6 months, I'm going to buy myself a cool new pair of shoes. Or
sure,
if I can save up this much money, I'm going to spend it on this thing. And I suck at those.
Well,
I've never been good at those.
I also think goals are used... to plan. Like, you set a goal, and what that makes you do is set smaller goals, and yet smaller goals, until it's like, every day, if I do this, I'll eventually reach this goal. If the way you accomplish things in your life does not involve that level of organization, and yet you still accomplish things in your life, you see what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I'm not accomplishing anything.
Well, I'm just saying... goal setting and then sub-goals until you've got each day planned, because you know, if I do this today and this today and this today, eventually I get there. That's one way of organizing your life that will achieve certain things. But it's not the only way.
Well, and it's a way that I'm terrible at, because as soon as it's formalized like that, then I can work around it. Especially if it's something that I give myself a potential reward or whatever, as soon as I figure out I can live without that, or I could just get it later, not in the guise of some sort of goal, then I'm done.
Exactly.
And if it's a thing where it's like, okay, I need to make sure I go to the gym 5 days every, like, then the first time it doesn't happen for whatever reason, and the world doesn't come crashing down, then I've proven that it doesn't really matter. Right. And so I'm just bad at those.
And yet, you accomplish things in your life that other people do goal setting and incentives for. You don't do it.
Because I suck at them, yeah.
No. Yeah, but you still get things done. You run games, you've started writing a book, you accomplish things at your job. You don't think of it in, you don't organize it that way, but you still achieve them, which is what I'm saying. There's a lot of ways to organize your life. Goal setting is one way, but that's not the only way, and you are achieving things without doing it like that.
Well, but more to the question, I don't think I set a lot of goals. So, I mean, it gets weird. I guess I had goals in terms of rewrite and stuff, and then I'm like, I'm hoping to get it done by this time. I mean, I guess that's a goal, but to me, it's just an estimation.
Well, maybe the question, a better question would be, what's the hardest thing you ever embarked on doing?
Marriage.
Is it, like, hands down?
It has to be. Because it's just so weird that it worked.
So you feel
like... There's just so many moving parts.
You feel like you've achieved it. Like, you've totally...
It's one of the... There's only two things in the world I'm proud of. My marriage and having a pool. That's it.
But the marriage is the hardest thing you've ever...
I think it is, but it didn't ever feel that way at the time. It's only looking back, because it's just a bunch of little things. When you look, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I had to get to know somebody to a level I didn't know was sort of possible. I had to get to know myself a lot better, and I had to make those two things, with other people's involvement, fit together for a whole life.
But even though, obviously, your marriage isn't over yet, you still feel like you've broken through something where you've achieved it.
Yeah, I mean, it works. That's the thing.
And there's no reason to think it'll ever not work.
I don't know. I do wonder about that sometimes, because that's the whole thing. Is like people, you know, people change over decades of time.
Sure.
And that's why some people who were happily married forever then get divorced or something. They become different people. But I'm at the point now where, like, all the stuff involved in keeping the marriage going is just what I call my life.
Right, but here's another
thing. And so at this point, it's not something I'm working on. It's just something that is who I am.
But
I am married to Trish.
Sure, but also another thing is, if the marriage were to end, that's not necessarily a failure. It depends on how it ends.
Not necessarily, yeah. I mean, I don't...
I mean, if it
ends, and I still, and it's not a goal I set.
No, right.
I didn't marry her, like, we're going to do this for... This, like, no, it just, I mean, and this is how, the only successful way I do things is you just have to do them, and if you don't do them, that doesn't change anything. The next day, you still got to do them, and so, I mean, those aren't really goals, but, like, I want to write a book, so I got to sit down and write a book. If I don't do that today, which, spoiler alert, I'm not going to do today, then I need to do it tomorrow. And if I don't do it tomorrow, I do it the next day. And I mean, and if I never do it, then I never do it.
Yeah.
But there's no other thing to it. And it's the same thing. Like, it doesn't come up with my marriage much, because there's very few days where it's like, well, I wasn't really a husband. Like,
yeah.
But there are days where it's like, I fucked up. Well, what do you do? Well, tomorrow, be a better husband.
Yeah, you do better, yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't, it's a mindset I don't have, which is less efficient for me. I don't get things done. I often don't get things done, and I often don't get things done at any quick speed.
Well, another thing is, I'm not sure I evaluate any goal as being hard or difficult. It's like, either I'm going to do it, or I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't... there's nothing... I don't really evaluate... I don't even really do a sensible risk assessment. It's like, to me... It's if someone says, well, did you do a risk assessment to figure out whether or not this is worth doing or whatever? I mean, I might do a kind of a risk assessment to mitigate certain things getting in the way, but not, I'm not going to sit there and decide, should I do this or not do it?
Yeah.
Either I have the feeling that I'm going to try to do it, or I'm not. Yeah. And if I'm going to do it, it's not really an issue of how difficult it is. And so I don't know if, since I never really think about my goals or the things I'm doing in terms of their level of difficulty, I don't know if I could even answer a question like this. Although I can say, I think, that for me, the most difficult, the most challenging task that I have ever undertook, or project, if you will, that I ever undertook, was parenting, obviously. And nothing else even comes close.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no point even in talking about anything else. Even as difficult as some of the things I've taken on have been, and sometimes some of the things I've failed and some of
succeeded.
Well, and
as somebody who hasn't parented, I still absolutely agree with you. That would
yeah,
be
it's, there's the just hardest. There's just no comparison. And yeah. I'll also say that this did not come as a surprise to me. What sometimes surprises me is how surprised other people are when they become a parent and they go, "Wow, this is difficult." I'm thinking, how did you not know that this was going
to
be difficult?
Well, to be fair, there are people who also get surprised in that exact same fashion when they become president. So,
well, anyway, I knew this was going to be the most challenging thing I would ever do. It's part of the reason why I wanted to do it, to be honest. And I think that it's been difficult for me, as you know, because there are a lot of ways to measure success in parenting. Most of them are baloney. I mean, it's
the only true one is what level of nursing care you end up
in. Well, the point is, it's raising kids is not like anything else. It's really not fair for you to try to evaluate it based on some economic model or some political model or even some psychological model. It just doesn't work like that. And of course, that's another thing that I've known even before I got started.
I mean, there are some low-level ones. If they survive to adulthood, you did something right.
Sure, sure, sure. Stuff like that. And there are a lot
of... Which is not to imply that if your kid dies early, you did something wrong. I'm just saying.
There are a lot of measures, like, you know, three kids, you know, two of them did really well in school. One of them was in the National Honor Society. Or maybe both of them were. I don't know, because the other one was living... By the time he was... could be in it. No, I think he was in the National Honor Society. He was living with his dad by then that happened. And... You know, things like that. I'm sure I could list several things that if I told another parent, well, these are the things that all three kids achieved, they'd think, oh my God, you must have been a great parent because of that. And there are some other things I could list that they would go, okay, well, that's not good, but that's not on you or not your fault. And then there are probably some other things I could list that if I just listed those things, nothing else,
you
they'd
monster.
Say, yeah, I was the worst parent that ever existed.
That's what I always say, no matter which thing you tell me.
So that's, I have to sort all that out. In terms of, you know, how I see how, you know, if I was a good parent or a bad parent or whatever. But I think ultimately what every parent has to do is you have to, first of all, if you love, like really love the kids, like unconditionally, you're going to do certain things that, you know, you could say are good things to do for the kids. And you're not, there's certain things you won't do that are bad for the kids. It just kind of naturally happens. It's not something you deserve a medal for or a pat on the back or a trophy. It's just you love them, so you do these things and you don't do these things. And sometimes you mess up. Sometimes you do it wrong. Sometimes you get angry. Sometimes you project your own fears onto them. You know, all kinds of stuff can happen when you're raising kids. And it does end. I mean, a lot of people say it never ends. They're always your babies or whatever. But the fact of the matter is they move out. They make choices of their own. They become adults. So it does end eventually. And so there does come a time where you kind of have to evaluate, well, how did that go? And, you know, I wish I could say that I felt like it was a success. I don't feel that way.
You still got all your fingers and toes.
And they do too. But... So, the hardest thing was raising kids. Did I succeed at it? It's hard to parse that out, right? I mean, because a lot of times the judgment has to do with where the kids are and what the kids are doing. But on the other hand, they're adults, so they can make their own decisions. How much of that am I responsible for, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes
I'm... Did you unsuccessfully raise some children, or did you successfully raise some shitty children?
Well, but like... Even before I was a parent, I sometimes got annoyed at how parents would seem to take pride and credit for the successes of their children, and but then distance themselves from the failures. It's like, well, you can't do that. You can't have it both ways. You know, either you're going to admit that these are individuals and let them have their own accomplishments that aren't yours, and also their own mistakes, or you know, you're going to take it all on you. And you probably shouldn't do that. So,
when good stuff happens to you, it was with God's help. When bad stuff happens to you, you probably did something.
You know,
you didn't pray hard
enough. We're watching Forensic Files again because some new episodes have come on. And it always amazes me when, you know, someone's brutally murdered. And it's just a terrible thing. But the forensic people are looking around and they find this little clue. And they don't know what it is at first or how it's going to play into it, but it turns out to be a linchpin to the whole case. And then some CSI or cop will say, yeah, I think God left that there so that we could solve this case. Forget about how God didn't protect this person from getting brutally murdered, but God's going to drop
a little... Shit, I just went away for a second to the bathroom.
Well, the very least I could do...
Well, here, I'll put this matchbook down. That'll be...
That'll make up for it.
You know, I've got another thing.
I mean, sometimes even the family will say that. Well, you know, God gave us a clue so that we could solve this person's murder. Why are you thanking God for giving you a clue to solve your daughter's murder instead of wondering why God didn't prevent the murder in the first place?
The one that drives Trish nuts is you're having trouble conceiving. So you go to fraternity clinic. They'll get you pregnant.
Oh, my God. No. Oh, no.
A fertility clinic.
Jeez.
And you take a bunch of fertility drugs and all this, and you have a baby. And as often happens with these things, you have multiple birth going on, and you're going to have, like, septuplets or something. But they're in there and weird, and it's in a position where, like, we have to... They're not all going to live. Like, so there's some discussion about, you know, aborting one child so that things can... And you need to make that decision, and they're always like, we're going to leave it in God's hands. And Trish once literally yelled at the TV, didn't leave it in God's hands when he decided you couldn't have a baby in the first place, did you?
Well, another thing about this whole thing about, well, God left a clue or whatever, a lot of times when these people are murdered, sometimes it's not by someone they know. They're like totally in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, you could maybe excuse God for like, well, they chose this partner, you know, they chose this husband and this husband killed them and, you know, but to prevent them from being at this gas station at this time where this serial killer was, you'd think God could, I don't know, have them trip or maybe just sneeze or something so that they're just 2 seconds later, but nope. God just let them get killed.
I'm like, you left the cigarette butt at the scene and it had your DNA evidence on it. No, I didn't leave it. God left it. Must be his DNA. I didn't leave that fucking cigarette butt. I clean up after my murders.
Oh, man,
pivot to, and I would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for you meddling God.
Am I wrong to think that's bizarre? Because
no, absolutely. I get bizarre. I think it's weird when people say so-and-so's going in for cancer, everybody should pray. I'm already weird there. I'm like,
well, that's true. Me too.
God's like, well, okay, enough people thought loudly enough. I guess I'll cure your cancer. So much of that. Again, what it comes down to, I mean, I don't believe in God. But I specifically don't believe in that version of God. So either I'm going to die and I won't face that version of God because I won't face anything because I'll be dead, or if there is a God, it won't be that fuck up a God or whatever. Or I will. And in which case, I'll be like, okay, I mean, I get you're God and you're going to send me to eternal damnation and stuff. But honestly, that was kind of a fucked up deal. So I don't feel too bad about my response to it because that was dumb as shit. Like, we were just supposed to pray loud enough and then you cure cancer and otherwise you don't? Or like, what?
Well,
come on.
I'm a believer and I find it almost... a little bit of an insult when someone says, well, God must have wanted us to solve this murder. It's like, what? I don't think of God
that
way either.
It's weird that God only wants you to solve, like, what, 48% of murders? Because the percentages are low.
Well, but I think another thing that bothers me about it is that what stake does God really have in it for you to capture this person and put him in jail?
Well, you've always got the ineffable plan excuse. Always. Ineffable. His plan is ineffable. You can't eff it. So, no, you don't understand. But the problem is that only works if you lay it 100% of the time. So anytime anything happens, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, right, right.
God clearly wanted it for part of his plan, but I have no idea why.
But why would God want this guy to go to jail?
Because in jail, he's going to find Jesus, and he's going to start a ministry that'll bring a whole bunch of other people to the flock.
But only after he kills six people. Not just five. He's got to kill six.
Yeah, if the weight of guilt wasn't enough, he would not have converted in jail. You can't F it. Stop trying to F it. Ineffable.
The point is, we send people to jail. I mean, we do it for ourselves. We don't do it for God. So God... I don't see why God would... I mean, if he's not going to care if the person is a killer and is killing these people, I don't see why he would care if that person goes to jail, except for making up a narrative like you just did. Like, well, that's just the perfect plan.
Go ahead. F you.
Isn't it Kumail that plans. Would always say would say these weird tweets and say, take that, atheist, or whether it was he did the death?
I feel like I haven't seen him in a while, but that does sound familiar, yeah.
Like something about, like, you know... I don't know.
I saw another one of those ones recently that they're like, people believe in the Big Bang, which is this explosion, but explosions destroy things, so how can it create a life?
Oh, God.
Take that side. And I'm like, no, because that's not actually what explosion means. So,
or
I mean, you never
Big
find
Bang means.
None of these people, I'm like, you know what? I dare you to go to college and study astrophysics, and then let's talk.
Yeah, right.
About how flat your earth is. Like, that's the thing. You're never, like, people are like, no, I understand all the math behind it, but it's clearly not. Like, no. It's always people who are like, oh, then how come I don't see the curve when I look at the whatever? Like, how come when I take this spirit level on a plane with me, the bubble doesn't move the way it, like, oh, man. People are the worst in both universes.
Oh, now don't generalize everybody just based on a few weirdos.
No, they're all a disaster.
Okay.
I have a goal of eradicating humanity. It was very hard, and I failed.
It was the hardest goal.
It was the hardest goal, because I was like, if you eradicate all humanity, I'll go get you a hot dog.
And then one day
I wasn't paying attention. I didn't even think about it. I just bought a hot dog. And it's I was like fuck,
crap.
This is way easier than... So now anytime I start thinking about it, I'm like, dude, chill. Just go get the hot dog. Just go buy the hot dog. Why is it always in the mystery episodes I come up with such great titles that we can't use? Fraternity clinic. Go buy the hot dog. Like, so many, but no, it's just going to be mystery episode. Blah, blah, blah. All right, we're over time. Go away, people. Don't like you anyway. Go buy a hot dog.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.